It's a pleasure to be here today, and I would really like to thank my co-authors on this. Harrison Ashley is in the room. Dusty, where's Dusty? Is he around here? Oh, there he is. I was sitting right next to him. Kelly Green, Roger Isom, Timothy, Tim Hayes. Anyway, they're very instrumental in helping collect this data. We work with them to send out the surveys. They communicate with their members and send it out, send it back, and then we do the analysis work. One of the key things here, of course, we do keep the information confidential, individual information, and we just present the composite data. But really the big thanks goes out to the Jenners that did complete this. I know it's a hassle. I know it's a pain. Nobody wants to do a survey. I think Dale Thompson talked about his wire survey in the technology committee, and he said that some people submitted it several times. I don't have that problem. Okay. Nobody submits it more than once. But anyway, we do appreciate that. And talking with the folks, they tell us how valuable this information is. Not maybe to the individual Jenners, but it's very valuable to the associations. It's valuable to the regulators and other people, and they're working in your behalf, so it's helping you in the long run. Just a little brief summary. Keep in mind this survey was 2016, so we're not talking about the current crop we just came through, but the 2016 crop, which produced 16.7 million bales. And you can see that by the black line there. The yellow line is a five-year running average. So we were pretty close to our average there, about 15 million bales. Also in 2016, the blue line shows the number of gins that we had. There was 556 gins that were processing cotton in 2016. And that gave us an average of about 30,000 bales per gin. Okay, now that's overall the whole cotton crop. From the survey, and you've seen this many times before, we really identify five major variable costs. Those are bagging and ties, repairs, electrical cost, dryer fuel cost, labor cost, and then we break the labor cost into seasonal and full-time. Now, in the past, and I've followed what Bill Mayfield did, who started this back in the 90s, we kept full-time costs as really a fixed variable. So what I really report in the study is seasonal costs. But sometimes I do combine them just to help us understand how much labor is going into producing a bale of cotton. And then we also ask a few informational type things, gin operation, gin performance data, and this sort of thing. This year was kind of unique. This is a breakdown on the size of the gin. We've kind of used the basic classing office sizes, 15,000 bales or less, 15 to 25, 25 to 40, and then 40,000 bales or more. And you see that over 41% of those bales, of those gins reporting, were 40,000 bales or more. So. The data is more skewed to the higher, larger gins. Also, you can kind of see there's a little split there. We have the so-called smaller gins, less than 15,000 bales, represented 27% of the data collected. And then kind of in between there was our 15 to 40,000 bales. Here's the basic average, and I went ahead and put up the 2013. I guess I didn't mention this, but we do this every 3 years. And so I put in the 13 data in there below it so you can get an idea. We got a total of 113 surveys back, and that represented 4.3 million bales, or 26% of the cotton crop. So that's not a bad survey response. To get 20% or 26% of your data. So we're pretty happy with that. You can also see, and this kind of skews it a little bit, the size of the gins that we're reporting. We had an average gin volume of 38,000 bales there. And that was comparison in 2013 of 22,000 bales. And of course, we did at that point drop in cost as well. If you recall, 2013 was a relatively small year. We only had 12 million bales, and so costs were a little bit higher. And I'll cover a little bit of that later. So you know, surprisingly, we did see a reduction in ginning costs for the 2016 season. And you can see just about every variable cost except for labor had a slight reduction. Also, here's some of the operational data that we presented. The operational period, 81 days compared to 13, which was 56, and the ginning rate, and you can go down there and see that. A couple of things I wanted to point out is the picker versus stripper gins. This time, we almost broke even 50-50. Normally, we again have more picker gins reporting. Here we had 49% of the cotton or the gins reporting were primarily stripped cotton. And a kind of a neat statistic that we started collecting, I guess, the last couple of years is the percent round modules. There we're looking at 41% of the responses had round modules in their gins. That was compared to 23% back in 2016. The Mid-South, I think, was the highest. It had a total of 61% of the gins reporting on this survey were using round modules. I went ahead and broke down. We divided, just like we do with the cotton classing data and everything else as far as quality, to the different four different regions, the Southeast, the Mid-South, Southwest, and West. And you can see the gradient that occurs from east to west. Typically, we don't see that big a difference between the Southeast and the Mid-South, which are primarily picker-type cotton gins. The Southeast has always really had a lower variable ginning cost, mainly because of their higher-producing, higher-capacity gins that they had there. This one was a little more extreme, I think, and Dusty may know better, that 16 was really not a good year for the Carolinas, and 15 was even worse. And so you see repair costs and labor costs, and some of those are relatively small. So they didn't have the crop that they wanted. I think they those are kind of skewed a little bit toward those weather conditions. The Southwest, which is typically stripper harvested cotton, we always see an additional cost go in there, additional labor cost, additional energy cost come out. And those are showing up pretty well as well. And, of course, the West, which includes the roller gin cotton, again, higher energy cost for production and higher labor cost. And so it stands out, as we have in the past years, continue to get the same kind of data that way. We also break down the five variable cost into the four different categories, with 15,000 bales all the way up to greater than 40,000 bales. And you can see, you know, the more we can produce, typically the cheaper the cost of ginning is. There's not a whole lot of difference in that once we start getting up into the 40,000 plus, we see a pretty good drop. Most of that comes out in labor. Labor is our biggest single cost that we have. And of faster processing seeds, basically we use less labor or have less labor cost involved in the bale. I went ahead and kind of produced the scatter diagram. Here it is, and then I broke it down into the four different regions. So these are the total variable cost in there. I think there's only like 56 dots, because even though I had 113 surveys return that we were able to keep, some of them didn't complete all the data, so I couldn't come up with a total cost for those. And so I think we ended up with like 56 that had a complete data set. And then I've color-coded them through the Southeast, Mid-South, Southwest, and West, and you can kind of see them divided there. The kind of trend line shows that, again, as we've seen in the other data, as we increase our bales per season, our costs are reduced as well. One of the things that we always like to look at, and when I talk with Jenners, I said, if you're not doing anything on your cost or whatever, one thing you should be looking at are your energy costs or your kilowatt hours per bale. And here's the data. We get this from the survey, plot it out, you know, and it runs pretty true. About 40 kilowatts per hour is what we need, and there's not a whole lot of variability based on gen size or gen volume. But you see, within that trend line, there's a lot of variability in the gens. Now, some of this is just bad data, but some of it is real. And I know Paul Funk and Bobby Harden we've kind of come back to this data in the past years and said, well, why is this gen at this point? And so we've literally gone to those gens that have that gave us that information and asked them if we could do some work with them. And sure enough, it was good data. Some gens, you know, the way their air is set up, some of the things that they're doing, they're wasting a lot of energy. Other gens are very efficient in their operation and actually able to gen cotton at about 30 kilowatt hours per bale, which is very good. So this is one thing I think gens can do. Take a quick look at what kind of energy you're using in your gen, and then be able to make some adjustments. There's some adjustments you can make. Some of them are just the actual design of the gen itself. So anyway, but that is an important figure, and I think one that can be valuable to genners and gen managers. Like I said, this survey is done every 3 years. Bill Mayfield started this back in the 90s. I picked it up in 2001. I think they're going to continue with Greg and Harrison looking at this data. Here's what we've seen over the years. And you can see, you know, basically gradual increase in bagging of ties, repair costs. As y'all know, in the ginning industry, no prices, no costs have gone down. And it's just a matter of efficiency that has made it work for you. We did get that kind of drop from 2013 to 2016. Which you can, you know, see right here. And that was just because really 13 was such a low year, the costs were quite a bit higher. 16, I think, got us more reasonable information in there to fit kind of the averages. At that point, again, if I have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. This we do have the paper that will be presented in the Beltwide proceedings, and the paper lists all the different data. So there's a lot more data in there than I'm presenting here, and you'll be able to take your gin and utilize it that way. We also, any ginner that did submit a survey and would like us to tell us where they fall on that scatter diagram, we'll be glad to circle their gin and send that back to them and then let them know where they are in the comparisons. That's right. Yeah. So, and Harrison will have it on the website as well as with the proceedings here. Any questions? Yes, Bobby.
You said that 41%
of the gen, does that include the round modules? No, I asked each gen what percentage of round modules they handled or the number of round modules. So that's the actual percentage. Yes, of modules that the round modules that we produced in the U.S. Because you're right, every gen had some round modules, just about. I don't think there was one survey that didn't. But some of those, especially the West Texas gens, they only had maybe just a few. Yeah. Other questions? Good one. All right, thank you, David.
We had built a relatively long break in, I'm assuming, to catch up if we got behind. You want to take a 15-minute break and start 15 minutes earlier or be back at 4?
I would probably need to start on time.
Okay. All right. We'll start it and come back at 4 o'clock, guys.